Hey friends, it's Katie. Listen, hiring can feel like a huge, big leap. It's expensive, it's vulnerable to other people into your business, and if you've been doing everything yourself, it can also feel maybe unnecessary. But what if building a team isn't a risk? It's actually a smart move for stabilizing and scaling your business. That's what we're digging into today with Angie Chua of Bobo Design Studio and Bobo Palm Springs. You may remember Angie from episode 426, where we talked about what's happening with Amazon right now and AI and scraping websites, and it's awful. I'll link that in the show notes. But today's conversation is more personal. We're talking about her evolution from the digital advertising world to building a travel-inspired stationery brand and a thriving brick and mortar shop in Palm Springs. Now, Angie shares what it was really like growing her business, the missteps, the hiring decisions, the moments of doubt that we all kind of face, and also the shifts that helped her step into true leadership. We talk about what happens when you hire your first employee, what it takes to let go of control, the reality of outsourcing to agency, and what that looked like for Angie, including what worked and what didn't, and why having a solid bookkeeper isn't optional if you want to scale a product-based business sustainably. She also opened up about her commitment to supporting artists from marginalized communities, how she navigates the seasonality of retail in Palm Springs, and what it looks like to practice self-compassion while growing a business. This is a grounded, honest conversation about growth, not a highlight reel, but the real version. Very relatable and also appreciated. Before we dive in, today's episode is brought to you by Digital Lizard, a sponsor of our Paper Camp program, which kicks off this week. Digital Lizard is a full-service marketing and print partner offering digital and offset printing, sourcing, procurement, and logistics. Our Paper Camp and lab students get access to a private proof-to-product print portal. Say that 10 times fast. And in that portal, you'll get discounted rates and a dedicated sales rep who supports project management from start to finish. Also, Digital Lizard tends to turn stuff around same day or next day. Many of our community members use Digital Lizard for product printing, packaging, catalogs, and marketing materials. Again, they offer low minimum quantities and fast turnaround times, which you know matters when you're managing inventory and cash flow. If you're looking for a reliable print partner, you can learn more about their capabilities at digitallizard.com. All right, let's dive in. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Hey, Angie, welcome back to Proof to Product.
Hi, happy to be here.
So you and I chatted recently about Amazon and everything that's going on there. I think I might air these episodes back to back because I feel like everyone's going to want to learn more about you after hearing that one. But tell everybody, tell the fine folks listening, like who you are, about your businesses, and what kind of products you sell.
Yeah, so happy to be here again. Thank you. I am Angie Chua, and I'm the founder, heart, and soul of Bobo Design Studio. I'm a stationery brand where we design and create travel-inspired stationery that encourages and enables people to explore the world around them. And in 2021, I opened a brick and mortar retail store in Palm Springs called Bobo Palm Springs. And it's my little stationery haven where we curate a collection of goods which come from women of color artists and queer artists, as well as imports from Japan and a selection of art supplies.
Awesome. Did the shop come before your brand? Like before you started selling products out of your own brand?
No, I've had my brand for quite some time. I used to make handcrafted bags back in like 2008. And then in 2017 or 16, I pivoted into stationery just because it was a more scalable business for me. Yeah. And have been a stationery peddler and hustler ever since.
My brand, Kelp Designs, my stationery brand that I had for many years, we had our tagline called Peddling Papers was what our tagline was. And we were paper hustlers for sure. That's so funny. Yeah. Okay, you have a really incredible rich background before you started these businesses. It sounds to me like you've always kind of been this entrepreneurial spirit that had things going on, but you were in the advertising industry for a long time. Is that correct?
Yes, I worked in digital advertising and brand advertising I spent a lot of time in like the ad tech world, and I got to work with some incredible brands like Red Bull and Mercedes and Toyota and Hulu and Netflix, and have done some really, really cool work with them in the past.
That's cool. And then you got into calligraphy. Was that kind of just like a side hobby type thing, or did you go into that as a business?
Yeah. So I have like no art, formal art background. I barely graduated high school. I'm like your classic D plus student. And I've always been like very creative and very artsy. And my teachers used to always say like, Angie had the nicest notes and the worst grades, because I used to like take notes and rewrite them multiple times, and I'd sell my other notes, and everyone else was doing great in school, but I wasn't. So I feel like from a very young age, I was like creative and like a little bit of like a hustler kind of a person, not in a negative way.
No, but just like excited about the creative side of it all. Yeah.
Yeah. And like being at my job, like it was really cool, and I did love it while I was there. But, you know, you just always yearn for more.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, really got into calligraphy, and I started like making these bags, and I was just doing everything else I could to like enrich myself. And it sort of snowballed from there. It's not the most linear path to where I am now. And it's almost even really hard to retell that story, because I've been, you know, I kind of ping ponged back and forth from a lot of different things, but success is never a straight line. And sometimes you have a U-turn, and sometimes you take a 90 degree turn. And I've definitely done all those things.
I agree with you. Success is definitely not linear. And also at the same time, I feel like all of those touch points along the way do really influence who we are now and how we choose to run our business now. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think my biggest, like everyone says, like, what do you attribute to like your success? And I'd say like every single failure. Like I'm so good at failing. Like you could endorse me on LinkedIn for failing. Yeah, I'm less fearful of failure than I am of success. So I think all of that has really shaped who I am, like what I want to try doing, what I feel comfortable doing, and, you know, kind of building that confidence for myself.
I love that you're addressing this, because I think so many people are afraid of failure. They're afraid that, oh, how are people going to perceive me, or what's going to happen if I fail at this? But to your point, it's just another stepping stone to learning more things and to figuring out what we truly want to be doing.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes I think if you're so successful right off the jump, you're actually setting yourself up, because how do you retrofit something if you've not had like minor setbacks along the way? And like, that's really, those tiny little hurdles are the building blocks for something that's going to be really solid in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So you've got the brick and mortar shop, you've got the design studio where you're creating your own product. How do you split your time between the two? It's a lot to do both. They're essentially separate businesses, but very intertwined as well.
Yeah. They're very, very different businesses. And I am so fortunate to have an incredible team to lean on and to trust. So our online business sits in our, essentially our warehouse with, I have an employee named Kat. Shout out to Kat. Catherine, she's amazing. But she handles all of our wholesale. She handles a lot of our product prep, and she handles all of our online orders. And then we have a retail store. And so we have staff for the retail store. And, you know, they're making sure that they're educating our customers on all the new products and doing everything that it takes to run a store. And so how do I split my time? It's like, I don't really know, but I know that I couldn't do it without the help of my team.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what was the first thing you hired for? Was it staff in the store?
Yes, I was one of those people where I felt like nobody could do what I could do. And I didn't want to outsource anything. I wasn't ready to have someone email people on my behalf. I wasn't ready to have anyone design things for me. So the store made a lot of sense. And looking back, I basically thought I was hiring someone to sit in a shop. But what I was really doing was hiring someone to be like the face of our business when I can't be. And that was such an important hire for me. Shout out to Valerie. She was so great and a huge ambassador for the brand. And ultimately, that showed me the importance of hiring and what that does for not only me as like a person to give me space and time, but it helped me understand my brand, hearing how other people talked about what we do. And so it was just such a valuable lesson, like as a person, as a business owner, and as a boss. It's like my first real time being a boss.
Has it gotten easier for you hiring team members over time? Like, it's pretty scary for a lot of brands when they're first hiring, you know, am I going to pick the right person? Am I going to set this up properly? Am I going to do them justice and give them a really enriching place to work?
Yeah, I'm always worried that I'm letting them down. I know that any failure that they have is probably a result of like something that I've dropped the ball on. I always joke that like they must hate to see me coming because I am so all over the place. And they're, you know, the most important thing is when you hire someone, you look for people who are better than you. So all my employees are like way better humans and way more organized than I am. So they hate to see me coming because I just get in their way. But, you know, you find people that you can trust and let them thrive and do what they do best. And it's something I still struggle with. This is my baby and I have to find a balance between stepping in and helping them, which ultimately sometimes doesn't, and learning how to delegate essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we start recording, you told me that it took you a really long time to hire somebody like Kat who would help with the wholesale outreach and management and everything like that. Tell me a little bit more about that. Like what kind of changed your mind and allowed you to hire it out?
So wholesale has always been something that I've wanted to do. You know, we create a lot of product. We have a lot sitting around. I want to move it at volume.
Yeah.
And I remember taking Paper Camp and realizing that I don't know if I can do this. I had everything that I needed and it was so structured. The program is great, but there was something that was preventing me from like sending that email. You know, I at this point have the store and I have the online and everything is going great, but there was just something about that additional outreach to a shop that really like held me back. And it took me a while to figure out what it was, but I remember showing Kat how to process an online order. Or it was even an employee before that. And it took so much energy for me to think about handing that task over that when I finally did it, it took them like 3.5 seconds to get it. And they're like, okay, yeah, now I got it. So I just do this. And I was like, oh, wait, I have been agonizing over this literally for years. And you're telling me in 3.5 seconds, you're like, okay, I got it sent. And I just realized that they do not have the same emotional connection as I do. They can shoot off an email. They can answer a problem. They can address an issue. And it doesn't have the same emotional weight that it does on me. And that was like the biggest eye opener that, oh, delegating really does work. And if you trust the right people and you train them, good things can happen. And that's what's happening. We're getting, you know, traction with wholesale and Kat's learning a lot. I'm learning a lot. We're understanding our customers better. And it's great. I should have done it sooner.
I hear this frequently from folks that I should have done this sooner. But at the same time, it's scary. Like you said, you carried that weight around of like the fears and the worries and the, oh, it's very personal, right? It's your putting your name out there, your brand out there, your products out there. And it does feel very personal. Business is personal, you know? And also having them advocate and like build those relationships on your behalf, just like in the store, but it's just a different segment of your customers.
Yeah, that means I get to have a different relationship with our stockists. It's not, you mentioned it before, it's not transactional. Mm-hmm. And I fully acknowledge that being able to say, I hire someone to do our wholesale is a privilege. But if you can find someone who can even just help, just shoot the emails off, like it doesn't even have to be like you're hiring someone a 9-to-5, that could really like pay for itself in the long run. So if you have the ability to even maybe try it, it could open actually a lot more doors than you doing it yourself.
I appreciate you saying that. I think what I'm seeing with the brands in our community and also the folks in my advisory board where I'm working very, very closely with them is that this is an up-and-coming position that's been growing for the last couple of years, people bringing in in-house salesperson. And to your point, it might just be a few hours a month where they're just sending out emails or responding to emails. But they have sales knowledge and they understand how wholesale works and how that relationship works. Or it could be somebody that's, you know, a lot more embedded in the business. It sounds kind of more like what Kat's doing, where they're helping to manage the relationships and the orders and all the other things. And so just for the listener's sake, I want to emphasize here that it could be as few as just a couple hours a month or a few hours a month or a week, or it could be something in a more larger capacity. But I do see this role growing in a lot of the more seasoned brands within the product space. You've also taken a chance on working with agencies in the past. You've tried to outsource in that respect. How was that a different experience than hiring somebody in-house?
Ay, Dios mío. Okay, where do I even begin? Yes. So we got to a point where we were scaling a lot and we actually hired this agency because there was a break somewhere in our site. And we couldn't really figure out all of a sudden overnight, our traffic dropped 80%. Our revenue dropped about 90%.
Wow.
Could not you know, I've DIY'd everything about this business up until that point. And, you know, I DIY'd our website. I was not capable of figuring out where was there a break between what my site was doing to what we were doing in our paid ads and Meta and that dashboard. I was basically desperate.
Yeah.
So I started calling around to see if there were any agencies that could help us find what was essentially wrong with the site. And my husband and I interviewed probably 4 or 5 agencies. We ended up settling on one, and it wasn't a hasty decision. I think we had 3 full 1-hour interviews with them and their team to understand what is going to happen. And ultimately, we trusted them with our business. And it was a $5,000 a month retainer on top of, I think it was $150 minimum day ad spend. So we had the like $7,000 in ad spend plus the $5,000 for them to manage our site and our newsletter. And we had never performed worse and nothing got fixed.
Oh, no.
And we had maybe a few gains each month, enough for us to continue trusting the process. We had a lot of drastic changes in the site being redone, to the email, to the list, to our ad structure, that I knew we have to give it time. So mm-hmm. I said, okay, even if we're losing money, we have to give it a little bit of time, because that's just how all of this works. We've changed too much at once. We don't know what's working. We don't know what's failing. Yeah. And ultimately, after like between 7 and 9 months, we pulled the plug and we lost over $40,000 just in retainer fees. And we ended up sort of fixing it on our own, but our revenue tanked. But ultimately, saving a dollar is as good as earning a dollar. And we ended up making it all back because we don't have to pay all those retainer fees. And now our business is stable again. But it's really scary trying to make a jump and do it during a time of desperation. And I don't recommend doing that. There are definitely reputable agencies out there, none of who I can name, but I know that they're out there. And even when you do your due diligence, like trust your gut and try and get good resources and references, because it can be really scary to hand it over.
Really scary. And it sounds to me like you were also looking for a partner to handle multiple things. It sounds like marketing and email and ad buying and website management. Like, that's a pretty big chunk of responsibilities. And so, you know, the fact that you did sit down with each of them for over an hour, whatever it was, and ask the questions. I'm sure you did your due diligence. Gosh, and to your point too, like, some of these things do take time to sort out. We've seen it with email marketing as an example. You know, you might shift something and it takes a couple months for people to boost your deliverability rates, for example, or something. But when you're making multiple changes at one time, that's really scary. I mean, you had to give it 6 months-ish to see if it was really working.
Yeah.
Did it feel like a big gamble at the time?
At the time, I was so optimistic. Even after like the first or second month where we weren't really seeing any gains, just because of my understanding of how Meta works and all, you know, and Google and all, I knew, I'm like, we just got to give it time. I'm feeling optimistic. But then we just started seeing a huge, you know, 4 or 5 different account managers touching our account. You know, we couldn't get through to have direct conversations with the folks that were building our email templates. And so it just started to be increasingly stressful.
Yeah.
And then their recommendation being like, you got to have a sale. And I'm like, I refuse to have a sale. We don't put our products on sale. We don't erode our brand. And ultimately having to do that in order to cover the costs. And it was really frustrating to spend so much time trying to convince them the value of our brand and then basically saying, we're going to do it our way and you should trust us. And then we did and nothing happened.
So what was the straw that broke the camel's back? Like, what made you decide, like, okay, we're done here? Like, what made you give notice? Or was it a bunch of little things along the way that were just like, this isn't working?
It was a lot of little things. And it was ultimately our bookkeeper going like, you don't have the runway to do this anymore.
Yeah.
Like, there is a line. And at this point, you know, we were constantly trying to cancel and end our contract with them. But my bookkeeper was like, if you want, you have to make a decision that's going to keep your business alive. And you are bleeding and hemorrhaging an insane amount of cash with this. So he didn't have to tell me twice. I mean, I kind of already knew it, but, you know, we listen to Norman. And when Norman tells us to do something, we do it.
Yeah, I would listen to Norman too. I mean, that's a big, well, and too, when you start to think about, okay, what could I use that $12,000 for? Or like, okay, if we're still going to allocate that $7,500 to ad spend, you just start to think the what ifs, right? You run through the scenarios of how could we allocate this time, this energy, this money mm-hmm. in different ways to get better results. And that's tough. Did that situation break your trust when it came to future hiring, whether that was in-house or outsourcing outside?
Yes, absolutely. I went back to trying to DIY everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my husband, he's quasi-affiliated with the business. He has like a full-time job. And I've never seen him more engaged in trying to figure out like what went wrong. And essentially, we were able to fix some of the issues on the site, updating it, making sure everything was current. And I went back to an old media buyer who just sort of like helped me restructure our ad account so that we mm-hmm. could run it. But, you know, right now we spend, I think, like $20 a day on ads. It's very nominal, just enough to keep the brand awareness up. But yeah. our online revenue is great now and it's stable and it's almost yeah. to where it used to be.
I love that you framed this. You said this earlier, and I just want to repeat it for the listeners. Cost savings are just as important as revenue growth. And that's because those cost savings put profit back into our pockets, just like the revenue coming in equates to profit
yeah.
after expenses are taken out. But did that shift your thinking with regards to how you're spending, what you're spending, what you're choosing to allocate it towards? It sounds like it did.
Yeah. I also have ADHD, so I'm terrible with money to begin with. And I'm also terrible with numbers. But, you know, we have weekly meetings with our bookkeeper, which I highly recommend. If you have to make a first hire and you're making pretty steady revenue, like before you hire anyone else, I would almost consider a bookkeeper, because there's nothing better than knowing what your dollars are doing. Yeah. And while saving a dollar is the same as earning a dollar, no $2 are worth the same. Like some dollars are actually worth more than others. And, you know, knowing what you pay in interest and knowing how much, you know, it takes for you to earn that dollar. Like I sometimes look at the revenue. Before my bookkeeper, my approach to accounting was, oh, there's a comma in the bank account. Like we're good. And he's like, absolutely not. That's not how this works. And I was like, I have a positive number in the bank account. Like, isn't that good? Because I very quickly learned like, oh, if you made $10,000, you know, in a month, it actually took you $9,000 to make it. And you're like, oh, really? So hire a bookkeeper and someone that you can trust to help you break down those numbers. But really understanding what your business is doing in terms of numbers is going to be so freeing and really like allow you to make good decisions for your business.
Oh, I'm over here like, yes, 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 yes. Because I hear this from so many folks. One, they're afraid to look at their numbers. They're afraid. And to what you said about, well, I saw there's money in the bank account, so I can use it, right? Like without the forethought of what else is coming or what needs to happen. That is so common in the product space.
And for very seasoned businesses. I know people yes. have been doing this for 20 years and they're like, I never look at my numbers. I don't actually, I go off vibes, or I've been doing this a long time. And the first time I looked at our revenue or our profit margin, I had no idea. Yes. And like, these are people that I have trusted for like a long time. And be like, I've looked up to you and you're telling me you don't know what your business is doing. It's not uncommon at all.
No, it's not.
Don't feel shamed.
Don't feel shame. But at the same time, let's get this organized, because it is so empowering when you know those numbers, when you can make decisions based on those numbers. Also, when you know those numbers, that's where you get to be creative. That's where you can get health insurance for your team, or put money into a retirement account, or give back to your community in some way. You can pay yourself more. Like when we know those numbers, we can use those numbers for higher impact. And I'm constantly begging brands, please, like, and I will say too, to your point, bookkeeping is one of the top things that people hire for first. I find that fulfillment and like production and then bookkeeping tend to be the two mm-hmm. positions most folks are hiring for first. And bookkeeping, hands down, is one of the best investments that you can have. And the fact that you've got Norman meeting with you weekly, I mean, that's incredible.
Monthly. He would probably drop me if I met with him weekly.
I was like, dang, weekly money dates is good. That's good. Yeah. But monthly is good too. I know some people in our community will do quarterly updates with their P&L. Some people are doing monthly. I do monthly, and I like to see my client stuff monthly if I can. I think we need to be able to catch these things before it gets too late. So anyhow, I'll get off my little soapbox here about getting your numbers in order. But I appreciate you saying that, because, again, no shame if we don't have them organized. But to know that there's like a whole other side of this that can be so enriching if you just kind of get uncomfortable with the numbers to get comfortable with them, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think everyone, you'll be pleasantly surprised at the end how much it can shift your perspective on your business and your success. Even if the numbers are bad at first, it just is so freeing to have small. That clarity. Yeah.
Yeah. If the numbers are bad or small, it's okay. Like, it's okay at first. You're gonna shift them. Gives you an opportunity to shift them. Okay, talk to me about the shop. What are you looking forward to in this coming year? Like, how are things going there? And you mentioned that it's your high season right now. We're recording this in January.
Yeah. So the summer is dead for us because it's a billion degrees. It gets to be like 120 in the summer. So we don't have any traffic. It's the seasonal traffic we get are primarily locals who we love. They keep us alive and afloat. Yeah. But in a time where so many businesses are not doing well, I feel very, very fortunate that our business is doing the best it's ever been. I think we're like 35% year over year for the retail shop, which is bonkers to me. We've been featured by the New York Times and the LA Times, which was also an incredible honor. Congrats. Especially in a tourist town where there are some of the best boutiques and retail shops, for them to look at our little paper shop and be like, this is very cool. It was a huge honor. And as a result, it's really elevated our brand footprint. And so we've got lots of people that travel from all over the world that like come to our shop. And I always feel so embarrassed. Like, this is it. I'm sorry. Like, you drove 2 hours out from LA and you came from Scotland, but it's really cool. And I think a lot of it has to do with just how tumultuous this year has been. And people are really leaning into art and their hobbies and ways to express themselves in an analog way. And we're happy to be a safe place for people to come and explore those types of hobbies. Also, all these stationery fests that have been popping up have been really helpful for us too. Chicago Stationery Fest, Yoseka, you know, there was Pen and Paper. There's just so many, and that's been great. And that's also kind of really shaped who is our customer, what are we going to service folks with. And so we're really leaning into like stationery in terms of tools. So we get a lot of Japanese imports, but also continuing to elevate the voices of people who don't typically get their stuff in mainstream stores. So women of color artists and queer artists, many of the brands we carry are from your community, which I know is going to welcome a lot of pitches. We have a very small store and we're pretty selective, but we love seeing the new stuff people are coming out with. It's just a really exciting place. I get to shop for a living and then play with stuff for a living. And I really can't complain.
I know. It's a good life, right?
Yeah.
It's a good life. All right. What about for you as leader of your business? What are you working on? How are you like sharpening your saw, so to speak, this year?
I have one major goal, and it's just to be nicer to myself. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like if I'm always thinking about all the things I couldn't accomplish or that I fell short on. And I think it does a disservice, obviously, to me and to my team. And I want to just be better at being nicer to myself, because I think that sets a better precedent for what we can expect from the business and how, you know, my staff looks to me for leadership. So I'm trying to do less and focus just on one thing. And that's the thing that I'm going to focus on.
I love it. Angie, you are a bright light in this industry and you are so smart. You really are. So the fact that you're talking about being kinder to yourself, please do, because you're amazing. And
thank you.
You should know that, you know.
Thank you.
Of course. All right. Well, tell everybody where they can shop with you, where they can follow you on socials, all the things.
Yeah. Our website is bobodesignstudio.com. You can find us on all the socials, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, with Bobo Design Studio. And if you want to just see the fun stuff that we've got in our shop and all the fun products we carry there, you can find us at Bobo Palm Springs.
And where is your shop too in Palm Springs?
We're right on the main drag. We're considered an uptown, but we're in a groovy little building called the Flannery Exchange. So we have a fun cafe space, which allows us to host weekly meetups and junk journal clubs and fun activities. So if you're ever in Palm Springs on a Friday night, please come and hang out with us. It's such a vibe.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, Angie, thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
It is always a pleasure catching up with Angie, and I hope that you enjoyed learning more about her journey in entrepreneurship and business. You can find all of her links in the show notes, so go follow her online, check out her shop if you're ever in Palm Springs, California. Also, I want to mention here that if you're ever considering hiring a team, or maybe you're not sure which roles to hire for first, I want to invite you to join our Labs community. Not only do we have a ton of sample job descriptions that are specifically built for product-based business owners, we also have trainings on figuring out who to hire, how to onboard a team member, and even a compliance training with an HR executive who can tell you if folks should be employees or independent contractors, because that's a big one, right? So you can learn more about that at prooftoproduct.com/labs. This is a membership that was built specifically for product brands who want to simplify their businesses, be more strategic, and make more money, and also connect with other creatives who sell products. So if that's something you're interested in, learn more about our community at prooftoproduct.com/labs. All right, thanks for tuning in today. I hope you have a great rest of your day.